and welcome back to the Art Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Wells. We are back from summer break, baby. Hope you feel rested up. Hope you had a good time away. I did. Took some time off. That's why there hasn't been an art podcast in the last 2 weeks. But now we're back, and we have a lot of things to talk about, okay? I think there's actually a theme for this art podcast, which is really nice because sometimes I feel like we don't have an overarching theme. So bear with me. See if this theme bears out. I think our art podcast theme here is remembering. There, doesn't that sound like a very public radio theme? If I wanted to be even more public radio-y, I'd call it remembrance. That would be our theme. But there are some really great stories that have been coming out from Michigan's artists all over the state. So we want to get right to it. We want to take you there. Little bit of a preview, some of the things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a documentary about a sole survivor of a Michigan plane crash. We're going to go to Michigan's Holocaust Museum. They're displaying one of the last remaining Nazi railway cars, the things that were used to transport Jews to concentration camps. And the museum has been getting some really interesting responses. But first off, we are going to celebrate a pretty big birthday. Idlewild, Michigan. Maybe you've heard of it. It's way up in Lake County, forested area, and this place used to be known as the Black Eden. Here's why. Back in segregation, from about the 1920s to the 1960s, tens of thousands of African Americans would come to this resort. All of the great musicians of the age, no exaggeration, just some of the biggest names of the time. And it was really a thriving cultural place. But today, it's a little sad. It's really struggling to even hold together as a basic town. And there have been efforts to try and get it going again. But so far, residents are still just hoping for something to change. And that's the story we want to bring you first.
My first time coming to Idaho, I was in 1954. And we got out of the car, and there were people there wall to wall. And I saw some of the prettiest women I'd ever seen in my life sunbathing. So I joined the crowd. They were just standing, observing, you know, looking at the beauty.
John Meeks is probably the most energetic 90-year-old you will ever meet. He has a round, open face, white stubble, and two great loves of his life. Good-looking women and Idlewild. He remembers all the great acts that came through here. Aretha Franklin, Louis Armstrong.
The Four Tops, Dinah Washington, George Kirby, Jackie Wilson.
But the loveliest, he says, was a showgirl at Idlewild's famous Paradise Club.
One of the most beautiful girls in Idlewild.
Her name is Carlene Gill, and she says in the middle of segregated America, you could turn off the highway at the Idlewild traffic light and just feel free.
You see that blinking light, and it just looked like you just relieve all of that pressure that was on you in the cities, and you just could relax, and you know you were there with just beautiful people.
At its peak, Idlewild drew 25,000 summer visitors from Cleveland to Chicago. But with integration, other resorts opened up to African Americans, and Idlewild began to die. These days, driving through Idlewild is actually kind of creepy. It's just endless acres of forest land with some abandoned shacks. The center of town is really just the post office and the Red Rooster Bar and Grill.
Fish with potato salad and sweet potato pie.
Potato salad and sweet potato pie.
Yeah.
It's a small crowd, but it's great food, and that's where I meet Hubert Brandon. He's a tall, lanky guy from Ohio, and he has come here with a mission to save Idlewild.
African Americans have no town that we can call our own. The Italian American population, the German American population, other populations have whole communities. Why not Idlewild?
Idlewild is still a beautiful place with cheap land and rich history. But people like Brandon have been trying to revitalize this place for decades, and they still don't have much to show for it. Brandon tries to talk one skeptical visitor into just giving them a little more time.
There's going to be a restaurant that you can come to. There's going to be some attractions for your kids, some more boat launches on these
lakes.
All right,
well, I'm not going to write you off now.
Okay,
so
that's what we need.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yet some in Idlewild say they need basic infrastructure more than they need museums.
If you wanted some milk, you got to go all the way to Baldwin. That's like 4 or 5 miles?
No, about 17 miles. So, I mean, but it's a journey.
Ron Griffin just won the primary election for town supervisor. He sits with me outside the Red Rooster Bar and Grill one warm Friday night.
We need business up here. I mean, you got to move on to reality. You know, the past is great. We understand that. But we can't go back. You can't go back into time.
And it's time that's left Idlewild behind. John Meeks, the 90-year-old ladies' man, says he knows desegregation brought an end to the old Idlewild. But he is still hopeful that one day African-American families will rediscover this place.
It's like a child under the control of the family. He's grown. Now he can do what he wants to do. But there's one thing about it. He always returned to his roots. He always returns and reconnects with the family.
Okay, now we are going to leave Lake County and we're going to head south to Farmington Hills. This is the site of the Holocaust Memorial Center. Maybe you've been there. Maybe you took field trips there in school. And that's where they are building a brand new exhibit that is going to house something that is pretty rare. It's believed to be one of the few remaining Nazi railway cars. You remember these things from history class. Again, it's the railway cars that Nazis used to transport Jews, millions of them, to concentration camps. And towards the end of the war, they were commandeered by the Allied forces. And we spoke with the museum's director, Stephen Goldman, and he says it's really interesting to watch how a Holocaust survivor will interact with the railway car.
It's interesting. When a survivor goes up to it, we'll look at it. We'll walk around it, but we'll not touch it. When a veteran who was in World War II goes up to it, he will touch it in the same way he would touch the Vietnam War Memorial and relate to it physically in a very different way.
So the museum bought this boxcar. It's about 30 feet long, 12 feet high. They got it for $6,000 from the Germans, although Goldman says it took about 6 or 7 times that just to get this thing over here to Michigan. And for the last year or so, they haven't had a permanent exhibit for it, but it's been on the museum's ground, sort of like by the parking lot from the sounds of it. And Goldman says it is unique in that it's gotten some unusual attention.
2 or 3 times a day, every single day, somebody will drive through our parking lot. The car will stop. People will get out and look at it, sometimes take a picture of it, and then get back in the car and drive on. They're not coming to the museum. They're not going to stay and visit or come to a program, but they came through because they saw the boxcar and they wanted to be near it.
So you can go check this out for yourself. The exhibit is going to open at the Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills in November. Now, speaking of other things that are also coming up, you should put them on your arts calendar. Filming has just wrapped up on a documentary called Soul Survivor. This is a movie about a young woman named Cecilia Cheehan. If you remember that name, it's probably because you know Cecilia was 4 years old when she survived a Detroit plane crash. This was about 25 years ago. The crash killed her parents, her brother, everybody else on the flight. She was the sole survivor. And she's never spoken about her experiences publicly before, but she and 13 other people who were each individually the only survivors of a commercial plane crash, each of these people is talking and featured and telling their stories in this new documentary. And I spoke with the director of the film. Her name is Kai Dickens.
August 16th, 1987, Northwest 255 crashed in Romulus, Michigan. It was a tragedy. It was the second largest aviation disaster in U.S. history. 156 people perished, and as well as people on the ground. And the only person to survive that tragedy was Cecilia. She was 4 years old at the time. She lost her entire family in the crash. And to not just the Michigan area, but to almost all of America, Cecilia was really seen as a hopeful, you know, ray of light in this horrible, sad tragedy.
Now, Kai says when she started filming, she noticed some single trait that all of these survivors shared. She said all of them had this very understandable feeling of loneliness and isolation. And you can understand that just by thinking about it. All of a sudden, you are separated from this community of crash victims and their families. You are the only one that survived. And it's not like there's support groups for being the only survivor of a plane crash. And she says it's also isolating because the survivors feel a lot of scrutiny from the public about what did they do with their lives? What are they doing with their lives? What are they not doing with their lives? How do they justify essentially being the only person to survive? So anyways, Kai says as filming went on, there really started to be an evolution. As the survivors met one another, they met some of the families. And she says something really interesting started to happen right towards the end of filming. Just as things were wrapping up, they were in the Michigan area, and this coincided with the 25th anniversary of the flight that Cecilia survived, the crash that Cecilia survived. That was Northwest Flight 255 in Romulus.
The amount of letters and emails that we received of, you know, victims' families telling us how happy that they were that Cecilia was finally speaking, because for them she was a link in this whole tragedy that had never really been soldered. And it was a link back to their loved ones, and also, you know, a way for them to almost catalog where their loved ones would be 25 years later. And getting some insight into that life, I just think, you know, and I can't explain why psychologically, but it really does facilitate, I think, that final step toward closure.
Kai and her team are now in post-production with the film. She's hoping that it'll be released in about 3 to 5 months. Again, the film is called Sole Survivor. It's already getting a lot of buzz, so expect to see plenty more about this. Well, that about wraps it up for us podcast listeners. Thank you so much for taking the time. Make sure you reach out through our website. Tell us what you want to hear on this art podcast. Tell us what you want Michigan Radio to be covering when it comes to arts, music, culture, anything in Michigan. Let us know. And you can find more from the stories that you heard about today, all of that on michiganradio.org. I'm Kate Wells. Thank you so much for listening.
Support for arts and cultural reporting on Michigan Radio comes in part from a grant from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.